Rilla Askew and Timothy O'Grady are both visiting associate professors with the University of Arkansas's programs in creative writing and translation. Rilla's latest novel, Kind of Kin, has just been released in paperback and earned a glowing review from the New York Times Book Review. Timothy's work is both in fiction and nonfiction, and his books include Motherland, which Publishers Weekly declared possesses a rare eloquence that gives the book a grandeur seldom encountered in contemporary fiction. Thursday night, both will read from their works at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to both writers about their work, teaching at the U of A this year, and if they've had the chance to read each other's work.
That's a very interesting question. Not really. And I think it's because there's an assumption that we make as fellow writers, as fellow fiction writers, and we're both novelists and we both work in other forms. Timothy writes creative nonfiction actually quite a bit. And so do I. And so I think we don't talk so much specifically about our individual work as we talk about the condition of being a writer and what that demands and how one lives as a writer, especially a writer of literary fiction, and how challenging that is to make a living at it and to establish yourself in the world.
I think it's also been unfortunate. I mean, just the demands of teaching are such that I don't have a chance to read anything that I don't have to read in order to teach. And I haven't read Rilla's books, and I'm looking forward to reading Rilla's books. And I will read Rilla's books in the summer, but I haven't had a chance to do that, and I lament that.
Well, it's interesting, and this question is now moot because – as an outsider on the surface, I thought there was some commonality because Kind of Kin deals with people in a way coming to this land and immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And you're someone who emigrated from the U.S., and I think that's somewhat in your writing. So there is that movement that exists, but obviously—
I think that's sort of serendipitous that we happened to both come here at the same time. And I also think that the relationship between writers, I've seen this— I see it with Tim, and I've seen it in other circumstances, that whether we know one another's work or not, we know one another as a writer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I believe that is true, yeah.
I imagine one of the more difficult parts of writing, whether it's nonfiction, whether it's literary fiction, is the ability to expand on an idea. I would think ideas are great. That you can find them a lot, but then knowing that there's enough there to devote the next part of your life to writing about it would be difficult.
That's the essential question, the one you're asking, I think. And it's if an idea comes to you, particularly if you're writing novels. A friend of mine has been writing novels for a long time, and he stopped, and he's writing short stories now, and he finds the relief of just having something be expendable. Like if it doesn't work out, well, so what? You know, he's only spent 2 days on it or something. I mean, if you commit yourself to a novel, you might be committing yourself to 5 or 6 years on a single idea. And if the idea runs out of steam, as I've seen happen with novels, novels sometimes start with a rush of energy and then slowly dissipate themselves through the pages because the idea isn't substantial enough to carry them through all the way. And you do have to be able to recognize an idea that contains enough that is the story that you want to tell, that you would love to be with, that you could engage with over such a long period of time through all the uncertainty and confusions and anxieties involved in producing a novel and getting lost. But the idea has to make you hungry enough to do it and have the patience to do it and the tolerate your own doubts during this process. And I think that is the secret. I mean, the idea creates the desire to express the idea, and the desire to express the idea allows you to put up with everything you have to put up with in order to write a novel. And, of course, everybody wants to feel those ideas because their identity is in this activity. And it can be the case that you see with writers, particularly as they get older, sometimes they don't have ideas, but they still have the skill. They still want to keep their hand moving. I would think, I mean, I heard a story about Beckett where, you know, he would go to a table every day and he would put his hands on the table and he could sit for 3 hours and his hands wouldn't move, and there would be an exercise book which he would write in, and maybe another day his hand might move across and open it and nothing would happen, and another day he might open it and write a sentence and his whole soul is screaming, "That's a lie." I mean, can you imagine what that's like?
No. No, thank goodness I can't.
I completely concur with everything Tim just said. And there's also the element of character. And so I think what you have to have is idea to carry you through 5 or 6 years, something that's substantial. But you also have – those characters have to have a vitality of their own that will also carry that forward, and that the life that they bring to it can sustain you, I think, sometimes through those – droughty periods or the times when you begin to understand that the thing that you started out with is not, you know, the notion that you started out with is not really what the book is going to be.
Well, let me ask you then, because in Kind of Canned, Sweet, the protagonist, is did you start in the creative process with her?
Not at all. She took over that book. I began the book in the voice of a little boy, her nephew, who's a grandfather. Sweet's father has been incarcerated for harboring undocumented workers in his barn. And I thought that the entire book was going to be in that little boy's voice. He's 10 years old, and he's starting out saying, you know, telling the story about his grandfather's arrest, his grandfather being in jail, and the conditions of his life. He's raised by his grandfather. And I thought the book was going to be a modern-day Huckleberry Finn sort of telling of these conditions and seen through the eye, this complicated issue of undocumented immigration seen through the innocent eyes of a young boy who only sees the human beings involved. And then his aunt just took over the next chapter, and she pretty much dominated the book. And I think a lot of fiction writers will tell you that it's not like you're channeling them. It's not as if it's as if that's where you can write. Sometimes you want to write something else, but the place where you are able to write, and in this case, it was Sweet's voice.
You're sharing a reading at Nightbird Books. Have you discussed how that will be organized?
No, we have not. But it's on Thursday, and I think on Thursday, the 4th of February, and I think that we'll discuss it.
6th, I think, isn't it?
6th.
I think it's the 6th.
It's the first Thursday in February.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, Thursday, February 6th.
Right.
We've got time to talk about it. We did one reading at the university for the fellow MFA students there already, and it was quite varied. Our approaches were very different. The material that we read was very different, and it made for an interesting reading. I thought, at least, that seemed to be the response from the faculty and students. So we're not in the same bailiwick, and that makes it more interesting.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it, because that first reading we did was really just for the MFA program, so it was the professors and the students. I mean, I've since had undergraduate students. I've got neighbors. You know, I've met people in the street, and it would be, you know, a pleasure for me to see them there, and I imagine Rilla has the same experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I'm looking forward just to, you know, talking to people that I have met in the course of being here through this reading.
What, if anything, did you know about the MFA program at the University of Arkansas before you arrived here?
I've been hearing about this MFA program since 1993, when I had a student who had longed to be here and didn't get accepted here. And so I've known for many years how well-regarded the program is, and I've had another former student who came and graduated from this program, has gone on to publish her first novel. And then eventually I met Molly Giles, who was here for some time, and she is a wonderful writer and became, you know, a good acquaintance. And so I've been on the – and I divide my time between New York and Oklahoma, so being as close in proximity, Oklahoma to Fayetteville, I've heard about it from that venue as well. So it's been around in my consciousness for decades.
I live in Europe, so I don't really know so much about the MFA programs in the United States. But I was teaching in Las Vegas, and when I was there, people did speak about it. I knew Barry Hanna, who mm-hmm. I met once or twice.
And Bats Out of Hell?
Yeah, and he was one of the first people that came through it. I heard the stories of the legendary Frank Stafford, and you know, I heard some things about it, and I heard some innovative aspects about the program, and you know, I just happened to see that the job was available, and I applied for it, and I'd been in Arkansas a few times. I remember a friend of mine; he was a poet friend of mine when I was a student, and I'd written to him when I first went through Arkansas in the 70s, and I said how much I loved it. And he said, "Well, your soul must not be dead yet if you love Arkansas." And there was something very interesting and sweet and kind of noble about the place. And I thought it would be a very nice place to be for a while. So.
And Fayetteville has such a good reputation. Across the border, people speak of what I always hear. Fayetteville is a nice town. Fayetteville is a cool town. And it has – I've never heard one individual ever say one bad word about the small city of Fayetteville, which is kind of amazing, really.
Rilla, will you be reading from Kind of Kin?
I certainly will. Yes, it's just out in paperback, and so I'm looking forward to the opportunity to share a little of it with the public.
Well, and I think the region you're in, Fayetteville, Arkansas, it and of course it's – you know, set very close to here. You grew up close to here. I think people will take to it very much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, it's something that's so much in the news at the time. It's something that our nation has to grapple with. It's about a state anti-illegal immigration law, which we have. Oklahoma passed theirs in 2007. It went into effect in November of that year, well before Arizona's law that got so much national attention. And there have been many states that have passed similar laws, and now they're backpedaling on it, and now there is a great conversation about immigration reform. But nothing has been done yet, and families continue to be separated every day. More people have been deported in during the Obama administration than in all the administrations before. So it's something that I think is urgent for us, our nation, to deal with and to grapple with. And I'm just showing in the novel, as one does, how those larger forces affect one family and one community, small town community in southeastern Oklahoma. When these kinds of laws are passed, they have a really powerful ripple effect, and they affect people's lives when the lawmakers pass the laws, they may or may not understand.
Have anticipated.
Yeah.
What will you read from?
I'm not sure, but I probably will read from this novel I'm writing now. That's what I'm most interested in. I think I'm writing a novel which is primarily set in San Francisco. It starts in Ireland. The main character was an IRA activist sniper who's becoming a painter, or he's going back to painting. And I'm collaborating with a painter on this book, and that's what I'm mostly engaged in. So probably I'll read from that. But I'll talk to Rilla about what she's going to read, and we'll try to make it work that the two things are of similar sizes. And
they'll speak to each other.
Yes.
One last question. How difficult is it to come up with a title for your work?
You're watching me shake my head in great pain. It is always difficult.
Because what you have to do is part marketing. You have to do it in a very few words. And it has to summarize what you've put blood, sweat, and tears into.
Exactly. It's the last thing. It is always the last thing for me. I write an entire novel and then wrestle with the agent and the editor and try to say, what are we going to call this thing?
I think there's a lot of luck in titles. You know, they just land on you or they don't. And if they don't, then you have to do what Hemingway did, start reading the Bible and making notes and, you know, writing down phrases and, you know, combing all of literature for something that would work. And he used to do that, and he assembled large numbers of titles. But I think they kind of just – they can just drop into your head. I mean, I've had them drop into my head on airplanes and, you know – and they seem to work, but it feels lucky if you get them, I think. It's true that publishers can have ideas. I wrote a novel about Irish immigrants going to live in England, and It was at one point called Acts of Memory, which just seemed, which I was calling it that, but it just seemed like a, you know, dull functional title. And the marketing department decided they wanted to call it Ireland. And I said, no, you can't. And they said, well, they then eventually told me that the sales reps were going to boycott the book unless I called it Ireland.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, well, fine. You know, they only have to live with it for a month. I have to live with it for the rest of my life. It's not going to be called Ireland. If you don't want to publish it, don't publish it. Wanted being called I Could Read the Sky.
Which is a great title.
Yeah. That came into me, my head on a plane.
Aha!
The objection to Ireland being that it was just so...
Well, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
I mean, they have this idea that if you put, you know, a book called... Because, you know, U2 was popular and there were some other musicians and Irish culture was popular in Europe at the time.
It was the hot...
You know, and I said, well, like, all you have to do is go into a bookshop and see remainder bins full of little, you know, men with flat caps and donkey carts and a book called Ireland, and it's, you know, out of print before it's even hit the shelves practically. You know, it was just obnoxious. But I think sometimes, particularly the corporate publishers, can think that they have a handle on the marketing of something that I think is somewhat of an illusion.
Timothy O'Grady and Rilla Askew are both visiting associate professors this year in the University of Arkansas's programs in creative writing and translation. Rilla's latest novel, Kind of Kin, has just been released in paperback, and Timothy's works include Motherland. They'll both read from and discuss their work at 7 Thursday night at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.